Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hi, welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm Diana Frike, your host. And on the Gooder Podcast, we get to talk with a powerhouse woman in CPG and their journeys to success. Thanks for joining us today. Real quick here, this episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm. At Retail Voodoo, we build beloved and dominant brands in the food, wellness, beverage, and fitness CPG industries. Anyone from multinational companies like PepsiCo and Starbucks to startups like HiKey and everyone in between. We guide mission-driven consumer brands to attract a broad and passionate fan base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. We have a proven process of working with several hundred brands over the past 30 years. So if you're ready to find a partner that will help you, your business, create a high-impact strategy that gives your brand an unfair advantage, Retail Voodoo is here to help. Just visit us at retail-voodoo.com or email. Actually, you can email me, diana@retailvoodoo.com, to learn more. So before introducing today's guest, I want to give a big thank you to Ms. Kaylee Clymer, who introduced me to our guest today. Kaylee is a public relations strategist with Clymer PR, and we met her a few years ago when working on the Lesser Evil rebrand. So check out what she's up to now over at ClymerPR.com. Well, today I'm excited to introduce Ms. Jess Wendell. Wendell, did I say that right, Wendell?
You did.
Okay, great. And she is founder of Maven Consulting, a strategic communications and public relations consultancy working with consumer brands. Call it passion, a love of people, or maybe just a natural knack for storytelling. Whatever it is, she's fueled by, Jess isn't slowing down anytime soon. Call it passion, love of people, or maybe just a natural knack for storytelling. Whatever it is she's fueled by, Jess isn't slowing down anytime soon. From the get-go, she knew her desire to represent brands and leaders with a purposeful story was a strong one. And after 12 years in PR, seven at the helm of BAM, the agency, and leading communications for fresh snacking leader Perfect Snacks, Jess launched Maven Consulting in 2020 to help consumer brands get their PR strategy on the right track and on their own terms and own time. Well, hello, Miss Jess. How are you?
Hello there. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. And I love your description of your company, Crush the Category. Yeah. I loved that.
Thank you.
That was a soundbite. Very, very well said.
Thank you.
An unfair advantage. I loved that too.
Yeah.
Very excited to be here and so happy to have connected with you. Thank you. Yes, to Kaylee. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the conversation today.
Sure. Well, so you're calling us, or you're on the call from San Diego, right? Is that where you are today?
I am, where it's always sunny and 75. And sometimes I crave a little bit of cloudiness so that I don't want to be outside and I can, you know, sit inside and be cozy, but it's a beautiful day here.
Oh, it's always,
I should come to Seattle, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's, you know, we get our cloudy days. It's been gorgeous all summer. And I mean, summer. So there's a reason why they call it the Emerald City. It's green predominantly because about 7 months out of the year, it's overcast. It doesn't rain a lot. That's a misnomer, but it's overcast. So when it does rain, we keep it, we retain it. And then subsequently we have green summers. I'll take that.
I love it.
Yeah. Hey, before we start, I always like to give my guests an opportunity to share more of who they are and what they do. But let's do that through the lens of Maven Consulting. Who is Maven Consulting and why did you start it?
Oh man, it has been, it's been a year since I started back in August of 2020. And really it stemmed from me trying to decide what was going to excite me the most and really get me fired up about work. I've always loved what I've done. As you mentioned, I worked for 7 years at a PR agency right out of college and went to school for PR and then shifted to the in-house side of Perfect Snacks for 6 years, still ongoing. There's still a client. And really, I was like, you know, what's next? We did get acquired, and I felt that my time there was, you know, at least coming to an end from a full-time standpoint. I felt like the team was really equipped with what we had built. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, do I go on the corporate side? Do I go work for big CPG? Because I haven't touched that yet. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, what really lights you up? And simultaneously, I did get connected for Naturally San Diego, and just being around these other brands and in such different stages of the company's, their company's life cycle, and meeting passionate founders and hearing what maybe challenges they may have had in the realm of PR once they found out what I did and, and what I had previously done for Perfect Snacks. And I thought, gosh, I know exactly what all these brands need to do. If I could just get a little, you know, if I could get their ear, if I could get a little bit of their time, I could really help them. And so having been on both sides of the coin of agency and in-house, I felt that I had a really unique perspective of what was maybe missing when engagements were taking place between PR agencies and brands prior to them being able to bring someone in-house to manage it full time. And so while I have the utmost respect and see total value in PR agencies working with brands, I thought there was an opportunity to empower and help brands truly understand why they need PR, not just a, oh, of course we're going to do PR because everyone does PR. It's what type, why, when, how much. And if they could understand that, I feel that they could make more informed decisions when it comes to working with agencies, freelancers. When is it time to bring someone in-house to really manage this? And so it kind of stemmed from a place of more, I want to empower and inform. And it has since, you know, transpired into a lot more. But I just, I was uncomfortable with having such little understanding of what it is that I was so passionate about in the world of PR. And for CEOs, board members to not really understand the value of it. Everyone always says, you can't measure awareness, you can't measure PR. Well, in fact, you can if you understand how it's working with everything else.
And there needs to be a little bit of traction too, I think, with PR. And oftentimes in a lot of marketing, it really depends on how sophisticated the client is too, let's be honest. You have to have a little bit of duration to understand what the return is and to be able to measure anything. I think a lot of people get antsy and have unrealistic expectations and things. 1 month or 2 months or even 3 months. I mean, at 3 months, you're just peeking under the hood of what's possible and it's not a real representation. But a lot of people think, well, it needs to be, you know, by 6 months, I should know. Well, maybe you just, but it's kind of like marathon training. You kind of have to keep doing the work. And then eventually you're like, oh, I'm doing 8 minute miles now. Oh, I'm doing 750 miles now.
And you start picking up speed. And I will say that one of the biggest validations for me that this was the route I was going to take was Perfect Snacks. We worked with a PR agency, I think four different PR agencies over the course of the first few years I was there. And I finally went to my VP and I said, look, if I can just hire an intern, I'm confident with the team that we've built out marketing because I'm not handling as much as they used to. We can do this ourselves and we might even be able to do it better because we might be able to be more agile. But there's so much to your point that goes into foundational work that once you hit your stride, you can hire that loaded gun PR agency or if you're looking for ways to ramp up your strategy or get a creative campaign in place. But most of the clients that I work with have either never really dabbled in PR, which to me, most people think of PR as media relations. I think of it as so much more. I think of any relationship that you have with a stakeholder that matters to your business, where they have an impact on your consumer. And so if media is just one channel, but when you think about a brand who has never worked with a specialist in the realm of PR, yep. it's first and foremost, what are you even saying? What is your message? What are you, what are you establishing and hanging your hat on? You want people to know so that when the communication happens, and that's why I make sure that we say we are communications agents first and foremost, because without the message and without the way to communicate that message effectively, then it doesn't matter who's talking about you, because what's going to hit that end consumer or that audience that you're trying to reach, it will not actually benefit your company. So let's get really clear on what that is in a number of ways first. And then we get to start having fun. Then we get to see how do we excite and attract these people to talk and amplify what we have to say.
I find that, you know, our firm, we do a lot of brand development, and we find some of our the best partners that we have post-strategy once we start moving towards activation and marketing planning are those PR partners, because first of all, they know what to do with a brand strategy and positioning. Like, that's a dream for the most PR agency.
Oh my gosh. Whenever I get start working with a client and they have just finished brand strategy work or positioning or a rebrand, I'm like, this is the holy grail. We get to start, we get a head start.
Totally. And then, you know, sometimes we work with firms, sometimes we work with people who have active PR going on, and there's some good solid foundational work there from a communication standpoint. And so I feel like the two work hand in hand so nicely together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to talk just really quickly about Naturally San Diego. You mentioned them for just about a heartbeat there. I think that you are one of the foundational members of Naturally San Diego. I incidentally had been talking with Sharon. Is it Red House?
Red House,
Red House, yes.
I believe
about starting, that's how you, starting a Naturally Seattle. And the conversation's gone a little bit quiet, Miss Sharon, but
we talked about it yesterday, actually. We actually just talked about it yesterday.
Did you?
She and I on a Zoom call. So it's in process.
I figured that it's either they're swimming or they're planning or they're something.
Yeah.
But tell us a little bit about why it was really important for San Diego specifically to have a Naturally a chapter. Like, let's talk about that.
We may have to have a whole nother podcast on Naturally, because it is truly my pride and joy. I have to give major credit to Ari Roz, who really was the catalyst for Naturally San Diego. And as you probably know, but maybe the audience doesn't, Naturally Network is now in existence to be the umbrella organization across the country and under which affiliates in each city will live. And Naturally Boulder was really the first, but there's also Chicago, Austin, Bay Area, North Bay, soon to be in New York and LA. And so 2 years ago this month, Ari came to a handful of natural brands in San Diego and said, hey, we need to put San Diego on the map for natural products. We need the big players in this category to do it. And so at the time I was at Perfect Snacks and I asked if I could be kind of the representative because I was so excited about it.
Okay.
And the best way I can explain it is that there are only a handful of times a year pre-COVID that we all got together, right? It's Expo East, Expo West, Fancy Food Show.
Right.
And I felt like it was the Super Bowl. And it was the only time you had to get, you know, you had to be so healthy because you're just going to be go, 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 go. You like take no breaks, get all the networking in, meet all the people, go to all the parties. And it's like, that should not be the case. And that shouldn't be the only time that we get access to each other. So when this was brought to my attention, I thought this is exactly what we need in this industry to be able to create more opportunities for connection. And we all crave it so much that if we create a forum for connection and community, I think people will grasp it. So that's really how it started. I mentioned, yes, I was on the founding board, but then I became the executive director for the past year. So I've just onboarded a brand new executive director. I think it actually got announced yesterday.
Oh my goodness.
And she's amazing. But I've been in the trenches for the last year, and we've been working to build this community and this network in a virtual environment where all the other affiliates have done in person. And that's it's predicated on in-person events. Yeah. And so we're now switching into a hybrid model, but we have two upcoming in-person events.
Gotcha.
Jamie Schmidt from Schmidt's Naturals is our first in-person event. We're doing a founder series.
That's
with
a big
her.
Deal.
Yeah. So, you know, it has been a labor of love, but we have 35 sponsors that are both natural brands and the companies that service them.
Nice.
It's just, and we have a board, board members from the natural brands across the county, you know, the leadership roles. And I have so much love and adoration for everyone who has believed in this organization. Mm-hmm. And I just can't believe what it's done in the past year. And it was the same year that I was building my business. So I, executive director in July, started my business in August doing a lot simultaneously, but it's just been beautiful to see something form during a time when community and networking, we needed it most, right?
Yeah.
We have never needed community more than we did the past year.
Agreed. I totally agree on that network. It's, these professional networks can be a little bit tricky, but you're right. You know, you go to, I tease every, you know, when we just onboarded a couple of new employees this week and and one is, it's just outside of the naturals category, just like an adjacent categories. And one is very familiar with the Expo West, you know, and what that is. And I was describing Expo West as, like the Super Bowl, you know, like you eat your Wheaties, wear tennis shoes. If you don't wear tennis shoes, you can always tell who the new guys are because they're wearing their heels or their dress shoes.
Don't have to tap out because of your shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, and I'm like, it's full body tackle, especially when you're in the center. Like, I have no idea how West is going to go this year. Like how do you, I mean, part of that is the experience, right? Like part of that is having the experience of like, oh my gosh, I'm at this mosh pit party. Everybody and their brother is here. And at the same time go, now I need my 3-foot buffer. I need my 3-foot buffer. Who knows what will be going on with COVID at that time. We keep seeing things change, but then also I don't think that anybody's even accustomed to that. Now we have we've got this new kind of way of seeing our body and our buffer zone now. So it'll be really interesting to see how that goes. I did go to my first trade show. I went to Sweets and Snacks last month. It was very sparsely attended, except for the people that did attend. The booths that were there, at least most of the people that I spoke to said it was actually really, really great because while they didn't have all the conversations that they normally had, they had basically almost the same number, if not more, conversations with real live actual buyers. So they weren't jockeying around the looky-loos and the people who were curious and the family members and we're going to send 15.
It was more quality.
Mm-hmm. So very curious to me to see what the impact will be. I think the people that did go to the show now, granted, I didn't talk to all of them, obviously, but the people that I went to said they were surprised at how great the show ended up being for them at the end of the day, just simply because you can even make that correlation with PR and social media and digital advertising. It's really not about volume.
Absolutely.
It's about hitting that right target and at the right time. So anyways,
I had a lot of clients asking whether they should go to Expo East. And I said, you know, I think understanding what their goals are, I thought it would be an opportunity to have more of those quality conversations because the brands, not only the buyers and the service providers, but the brands who are going are only going if it really is meaningful to them.
Exactly.
I know, you know, being part of a brand that it was like, of course you go to Expo West, of course you go to Expo East, like no questions asked. I think that it's just much more intentional now.
Yes.
And so it creates more room for the brands that actually deserve to get the attention or need it most right now. And so I do think that the dynamic is changing for the better to some degree.
Yeah. I mean, it'll always change. That's the thing is with humans, everything's dynamic, but
of course
it's pretty great. Well, let's go back a little bit in time now. And tell us a little bit about those early days of your career and kind of maybe a couple of those pivotal moments that, looking back, were the things that were like, oh yeah, when that happened and that happened, that is my direct correlation to me being here now. Can you share a couple of those? Do you remember them?
I do. I like to think it wasn't that long ago, but I think I've always just really gravitated. I said I majored in PR. I've always been a writer. I've always really been a relationship person. But what I found being at an agency and primarily handling media relations is that the correlation between, or not even the correlation, but really the association of PR with marketing was just non-existent. And they've been so siloed for so long.
Yeah.
And it's not fair to think that they can't be blurred lines between the two and that there can be overlap. And what I realized by being at a PR agency and truly being external is that we were not privy as the PR partner to a lot of the information that would have really helped us do better at our jobs. We were given the information that they thought we needed, but again, that goes back to not truly understanding what our role is. Mm-hmm. So for me, I always felt like I was working at an arm's distance and only handling a small, small segment of what I actually could be handling because I didn't have a full understanding of what was happening within the company.
Gotcha.
When I went in-house, I felt like it was a whole new world and it was just like bright and beautiful because I had access to the information that I otherwise wouldn't have had.
Yeah.
And it made me realize what was needed as a liaison from an external agency. And much like any outsourced specialist that you bring in, you're only as good as the information that you give them and the tools that they have to execute for you. And I'll never forget one of my good friends, Sarah Brooks of Covet PR. She said, when I was telling her about starting Maven, I said, I just want to do what I did when we worked with Covet, which was, you know, I helped you guys do your job better because I knew what you needed because I'd been there before. And she said, Jess, if every brand had a U in it, like Perfect Snacks did, we could be so much more successful.
Yeah.
And when that just always stuck with me because I thought I can be that person. I can truly be the extension of a team where I understand sales, ops, finance, legal even because I've had to. And that will help us be more focused on a PR side, even if we're not the ones doing it. So something about Maven is that we also coach teams and train teams to execute PR on their own, like I did at Perfect Snacks, or we bring in contractor specialists to execute different PR tactics on their own. But either way, both of those options require a thorough understanding of the entire ecosystem and not just the siloed parts. And so I think just the eye-opening aspects of being on both sides of it and seeing where the missed opportunities lied.
Now you may have already answered this a little bit, but like, was there a turning point aside from the one that you did talk about the like, well, you know, I was here for 7 years and it looked like kind of my time was starting to, you know, it was time for me to move on. Was there any other point where you were like, someday, I'm going to be doing something like this? Or was it literally that event and that experience that brought you to Maven?
I never thought I would own my own agency business. That was never my intent. I've always loved helping others grow something that they're really passionate about. And I think the shift was that I realized I can still help other people grow what they're really passionate about. And it just happens to also be by way of my own business. Yeah. And that was so exciting to me because I cry every time I talk about Perfect Snacks because I just love them so much. They're my family. And I was so grateful. I still am so grateful that I was able to go to them and say, look, I'm really excited about the opportunity to do what I did here, but for other brands, you know, is there an opportunity where we could still work together and I can still infuse value where I think value is needed most and taper off a bit in other areas. And I mean, they said yes. And that gave me the courage to say, okay, I still have Perfect Snacks. I can still kind of dabble and see what it's like working with other brands. But the opportunity to go in and just work with directly with founders, work with these marketing teams that I just want to help them. I want to make their lives easier and the results land better. And the only way that we can do that is if we work really closely together, as if I am on the team and, you know, now I have a team. So it's really exciting to be able to have a similar dynamic that I did at Perfect Snacks. Yeah. And I was drinking the Kool-Aid at Perfect Snacks and thinking, and I still believe this, but, you know, Perfect Snacks is a unicorn. There's nothing else like it. We're like the, you know, there's no other company that will give me what Perfect Snacks did. And come to find out, my God, every company is just so special in their own right. Every story, every founder, every product. I mean, it's just so incredible once you do peel back the layers a little bit and give a bit of attention. And that's what I hope to do, is to be able to show these lesser known aspects of companies and brands that you don't get to see all the time. And it's, what should we highlight about you that's really going to evoke emotion and not just function of your products? Mm-hmm. So I think, Perfect Snacks just taught me so much, and it taught me what a killer story can do for your brand. And, you know, the Perfect Snacks story is unlike anything else. I will say that. But it just, there's so many nuggets that sometimes don't see the light of day because they don't have the means or the channels to do so. And so it's exciting for me to be able to bring those out.
Well, what a special family you come from, because it is actually probably more unique than maybe you might know or recognize, but to have a leadership that is willing to help you grow as a person or professionally and not have it be about what you can do for them really at the end of the day is pretty great. It's really great.
It's so special, and they will forever just have such a special place in my heart, because I don't know that I could have done this like cold turkey. Scary.
Yeah. Well, so now you've had all this experience understanding the operations of a business from before you were having your own business. Now, granted, you've only been doing this for a year as on your own. I'm wondering, have you crashed into anything yet that you were like, oh, this makes sense as to why this and this was happening over here organizationally from a business perspective, not necessarily from a PR perspective. And do you have any of those moments like where things clicked into place and you're like, oh, got it. Now I understand it at the next level.
Absolutely. I think no one really prepares you for starting a business.
That's the truth.
And I say that if somebody really did, if I could have just like gotten a peek, I probably would have been a bit terrified and ran the other way. But to answer your question specifically, I do think that you go in kind of with this theory and this desire. I was like, I am not going to be cookie cutter. What we offer is going to be customized. It's going to be whatever the brand needs. And that's really why I do call Maven a consultancy, because I want to be able to go in and assess the needs and then dive in where it's needed, as opposed to showing up with a very cookie cutter game plan. And this is what we offer and this is what we do, whether you need it or not. That's where I think relationships go awry, because it's like, well, that's great that you did that and you did it well, but we didn't actually need that.
Right.
So I went in with that mindset of like, I'm going to customize everything. And I would say probably 3 months in, I realize why things are a bit more cookie-cutter and why structure and
operationally that doesn't work.
And I will say I'm much more of a creative and left brain person as it relates to like structure and process, but I have some very incredible coaches and guides that really helped me to not become too much of what I didn't want to become, but have that healthy balance so that I have 3 full-time people now that I feel so confident in their abilities because we have structure and systems and processes.
Yes.
And so I was, wanting to come in when it is just you you can kind of do that. You can be willy-nilly. Sure. You can not have too much consistency or repetition. But the second that you start to scale, that becomes really difficult to function like that. Mm-hmm. And so it was a big learning for me of you don't have to sacrifice what's really important to you. I don't ever want to show up and say, here's what we do, and this is only what we do, and we're not going to make this a fit for you. But I also, I turn away brands who don't want to follow the model that we've set out.
Yep. We're the same way.
Mm-hmm. If they don't want to go through the process that we have laid out, it doesn't mean you're not going to get your needs met or your needs spoken to. It just means that you got to do this first so that we're set up for success. So structure is now very much part of the business.
Is that so funny? I'm the same way too. When I joined my business partner in 2006, he was very much a process. I mean, he'd been running the business for a long time, so he knew what he was doing, but me stepping in as kind of the new guy and kind of going, well, you know, why would we do this now? What I learned actually is really valuable. And I don't know if you'd articulate it this way or not, but the process remains rigid. The outputs are customized.
Yeah.
How do you get to the solution?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I'll reference marathon training. I do this all the time, mostly because I'm on the forever path of marathon training. I don't know if I've ever run one, but I do desire to run one. But there is like a methodology. You run like this for a while, and then you do this, and then you do this, and then you do this. And then this week you do the same process, but you do it faster, or you do it longer, or you do it more. And then you do it. And at the end of the day, you finish a marathon, and everybody finishes the marathon if they follow the process. Same concept. Outputs are slightly different.
Absolutely. That is exactly it.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, you know, I kind of like to have two questions. I think I might steer more towards this one, which is, as you've been building your own business, are you finding that you're seeing the same misconceptions about PR as you, in your current role, as you did when you were in-house or working for other people? Is there like a general misnomer, and what is it that you wish you could get people to understand about the power of what you can and can't do?
Ooh, I have so many thoughts and feelings about this, because I'm just so passionate about talking with people and ensuring that they do have a bit more clarity. I think PR has been around. I always say, even if you think you're not doing PR, you are.
Yeah.
Because if you have publics and stakeholders that, not publics like with an X, publics with a CS.
Got it.
If you have publics and stakeholders that matter to your business, if you even haven't launched yet, you are doing public relations, you just don't have control over it. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that the common misconception is people are saying, oh, we're not ready for PR. We don't need PR, or we don't have the budget for it. And my response to that is, you're doing it already. I think understanding what that looks like is important, because the most common misconception is it's just media relations.
Yeah.
It's media coverage, getting publicity.
Yeah.
And it's truly not that. We've covered it already, but it's the messaging, the communications, the who you're talking to, and how you are encouraging and exciting them to share your message far and wide. And so if we think about that, I have 18 different buckets that I call them buckets of part of our assessment phase, which is a process.
Yeah.
We go into each of those buckets and I say, okay, great. What are you currently doing for trade shows?
Yeah.
What are you currently doing with your buyers? How are you building relationships and fostering relationships with them? Mm-hmm. And there is not a single person I've ever spoken to that would bring up buyers in the same breath of PR. Right. And when I bring that up, they're like, how is that PR? And I said, well, if your buyer doesn't really think highly of you, do you think you're going to get that prime shelf space? Do you think that you're going to get that meeting with the, you know, other category that you're now innovating in? That is a relationship that you have to foster, and you need to foster it before you need it. And so how do we do that?
Right.
How do we ensure, same thing with your investors.
Yep.
It's all about perception, reputation, which ultimately drives behaviors and actions, right? So it's quite, it can look a lot of different ways. And that's why part of our assessment phase is, what are the needs and goals of the company right now? Because your needs and goals are very different depending on where you are available to consumers. Yeah. If it's only online, if it's only in store, it's very different if you're trying to fundraise versus trying to just get sales from consumers. Yeah. It's a very different approach. Yeah. And so I think there are so many common misconceptions, but the first and biggest one is that what is encompassed within PR, I think has been for so long just tied media relations. And in fact, there's so much more.
Yeah. Interesting. I think, you know, of course, when we're talking about the most sophisticated brands, they get it. The multinationals, the big giant ones, it's the small to mid cap guys that sometimes struggle. And it's so tough because we use a label like public relations, or in our space, brand strategy. And so many people have glommed onto it in so many different ways and translated it that there's kind of this aggregate, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, it's hard to define.
Yeah.
It's, if it's all within this umbrella, then how do you more clearly defined. Every week I feel like I'm rewriting our taglines and mission because I'm trying to adequately convey what we do. And the other thing I'll say is just when you look at it with the lens that I do, opportunity is everywhere. And I've said to, you know, my parents are always, they're both therapists and they're always worried about, you know, how's your stress level? How's your emotional well-being? And I said, you know, constantly over this past year, I am more overwhelmed with opportunity than anything else. Yeah. Like, it's just that opportunity is everywhere. And when you do have your own business, you can seize it if you really want to.
Yeah.
And so because there's 18 buckets that can fall within the realm of what we do, it's overwhelming. So you have to find ways to prioritize based on the needs and the goals and the budget and the bandwidth, all these things that we consider before we really make a suggestion on strategy.
Yeah. Well, when you, you know, kind of further down this topic, there were two things that we for sure wanted to discuss during our time together. And one was kind of taking this concept of misconceptions, but aiming it towards those kind of emerging brands and these poor humans with loads of passion for what they're, you know, what it is that they're trying to do at the end of the day, are overwhelmed with what is the right amount, the right way, the right mix, the right blank, blank, blank. And you and I talked a little bit about kind of what those, we talked about the misconceptions, but maybe we could talk about like, what are those fundamental basics that you go, okay, you guys can't afford us right now. Got it. Here's what I recommend you do. Here's your top two things that even if it's just organizing your information, put them in a bucket and just do this. If you do nothing else, just do this. Do you have that recommendation? Are there like those basics?
Absolutely. And that's, I think, what excites me the most about what we do is because I see firsthand just the passion and the desire behind these brands with these passionate founders you're talking about. And it's analysis paralysis. There are so many things that we need to do, can do, have in front of us. What do we pull the lever on and when?
Yeah.
And how are we most efficient with our time and money? And so, yes, in the scenario that, well, one of the key fundamentals of my business is that I want to be able to work with anyone. And so if you come to me and you are like, we cannot afford to have a full-blown PR campaign right now. We can't do your major strategy sessions.
Yeah.
We, you know, but we still want to talk with you. So at our core, we're a consultancy and you can come on for 3 months at 5 hours a month. And that is it. And that can be a lead into more. Mm-hmm. It can help us get to know each other. It can help us recommend what I will share with you in a minute of, okay, you guys start doing this on your own. And then we'll come in a couple months when we get, maybe get some traction. Or if a brand's not launching for another 6 months to a year, it's like, okay, let's at least be part of the conversation. So that the decisions that you're making on even packaging, even I've had editors tell me before that they love the product, but they're not willing to publish it in their print magazine because it's not in line with the aesthetic they're going for.
Yeah.
Every part of the, I'm sure you know that from the branding side, that every part of the business, especially in those early stages where decisions are being made, you know, it's not, it will not do any harm to have a PR lens on it. So I love that opportunity to just work with brands at a very high level in that way. But if they said, we can't work with you at all, I would say the first thing to do is to, on a piece of paper, write down who are the people that our consumers trust most? Where are they going to get their information? Yeah. Where are they going to, who do they trust? Who are they loyal to?
Yeah.
You can definitely go down the realm of, you know, different media platforms. So it's what magazines, what podcasts, what influencers on social media, but even beyond that, who has a stake in our business? And that's where like the buyers and trade shows, industry publications that are hosting events and speaking opportunities. Think about who are the most high caliber or high value stakeholders, mm-hmm. and think about your relationship with them. Do you have one? Do mm-hmm. you not? There are certain ones that are easier to break through than others, right? You're already talking to your buyers. You already have a warm lead there. If you're already going to this trade show, how do you, I always say like, what is the most we can get out of this trade show? You know, like how do we rub elbows with the right people so that we show up in the places that you just have to ask, can you show up there?
Yep.
And so I think getting a clear understanding of who are those stakeholders is first and foremost. Which are the warm leads? Which are the cold leads? You've never reached out to a media contact before. Probably something that you will need a bit more support with, but what are those warm leads? Like, how do you build better relationships with your investors?
Yeah.
What do they care about outside of the scheduled meetings that you have?
Yeah.
It could be something as simple as remembering their kid's birthday, remembering their anniversary. That is a PR tactic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very,
it has to be genuine simple. Though.
Absolutely. But it can be a concerted effort.
Yeah.
While also coming off as genuine. Right. So you also have to speak to who your brand is. If you I'm going to use Liquid Death as an example.
Yeah.
It would not be on brand for them to write like these sweet, fuzzy birthday cards to people, to their stakeholders. Right. Yeah. So it's how do you, and that goes with step one, which is messaging. Who are you? How do you come off? What's your personality that you need to maintain throughout your communication? So it's getting creative ways. I mean, I'm hesitant to share certain things because I don't know if they're proprietary, but I will say that at Perfect Snacks, we got into a buyer meeting that absolutely changed the game for us. Sending a life-size heart box of chocolates with our new, with our new chocolate chip bar. And we had a Postmates person hand deliver it to the office when we knew the buyer meeting was taking place. They tasted it. We got distribution in one of the biggest retailers in the country. And without that, we joke that like it said on the front, it said to me, you're perfect. It was around Valentine's Day. And we joked that like, we may not have gotten that had we not just done that out of the box quick. We knew it was happening. They weren't testing our product. So it's stuff like that, that really speaks to who you are as a brand. And you're right. It has to be genuine. But it can be simple.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, let's move on to the next topic that I think is really valuable only because I've seen a few of our client friends crash into this over the years. Now, granted, I've been with David since 2006 and only seen this happen a couple of times, but this, I want to talk about crisis management. Crisis communication, quite frankly, is really what it is. And it's a topic that nobody likes to be prepared for. It's a subject that nobody likes to be prepared for. And yet it is probably, I almost want to say even more important. Maybe you might say this wrong, but knowing what to do in a crisis, which could be anything from a supply chain difficulty to a major HR issue or, you know, or catastrophe even. Can you share what, you know, maybe you can give to those of us like me, what is the psychology behind people not preparing for it? Is it that just people just don't want to deal with it? And then what are kind of the, so those foundational elements, and how do they plug in with your, the foundational elements of just building a strategy? You know, how do we prepare for crisis management before there's a crisis?
Absolutely. Also another topic I think we could probably have an entire podcast on. Well, I mentioned that both my parents are psychologists, so I feel like that does play into so much of what I do. And yeah. I think the psychology behind it is similar to a prenup. When you are getting married and you are, you know, so excited about all the things that come with marriage and a wedding, the last thing you want to talk about is a prenup.
Right. Right. But okay.
If you are not anticipating that this might not end the way that you think it is with butterflies and rainbows, mm-hmm. you're probably talking about, at least talking about a prenup, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Planning for it.
Yeah.
Similarly, nobody wants, I say it's like the R word I never say, recall. Yeah. Because no one wants to talk about it. Nobody yeah. wants to put that out there in the universe.
Right.
So people don't plan for it. They don't anticipate. And a crisis can look, as you mentioned, it can take many forms, and oftentimes you will never know exactly how it's going to play out.
Right.
And so I think the most important thing, and the reason why this, you know, a crisis happens and why it gets pulled into PR, and it's called crisis PR, is because it's all about how you communicate and essentially do damage control.
Yeah.
But the reason that it's in the PR realm is because it ultimately will affect and impact the perception and the reputation yeah. of your company. We've seen it time and time again. Crisis happens. Brand company is forever plagued by what happened to them because of the way that they handled it.
Yeah.
It's not because the crisis happened, because guess what? Crises yeah. are going to happen. And it's truly the way you handle it is the yeah. PR side of it. And so what I like to do, because you don't know what the crisis is going to look
right.
like, I think it's getting like 75% of the way there. And one of the most important things is to have the cross-functional alignment within your company. So when we did a crisis exercise at Perfect Snacks, we brought in ops, sales, finance. What does everyone's role entail if a crisis, regardless of what it looks like, takes place? And if we can understand roles, responsibilities, communication dynamics, and who's responsible for what, at least we have the framework in place to where when we ring the alarm, it's, we follow an action plan. It's like an evacuation plan.
Yeah.
It's, I'm looking at an evacuation plan right now. And it's putting that together, because we don't know if it's going to be a heavy rainstorm and the place is going to flood, or if it's going right. to be an earthquake. We don't know what that evacuation plan right. is going to be prompted by, but we at least have an idea of how we will probably go about mm-hmm. executing the management of that disaster.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is, what I'm hearing is a really valuable, and I hadn't really considered it, but understanding who the key players are cross-functionally. So
yes,
that, because that is, I think, where a lot of people start spinning, and then individuals just start talking. And that, I think, is where the big error can happen. And when you're talking
about
something,
so many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're talking about something like a recall or an injury that gets publicized, or, you know,
or somebody saying something on social media that goes viral.
Yeah. Or even something that is beyond any of our controls. Like, you know, when Starbucks had to, or, and how, I can't even think of how many companies had to deal with a tsunami that happened in Japan. You know, all of a sudden you have all of these companies that are dealing with employees, investors, and blah, 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 blah. And every part of the company, I only know this, my sister-in-law was headed up basically crisis management. There's like a whole team that's all they did was planned and managed for crisis management. But as Starbucks is a big company, so that when the tsunami hit, it was like she was on call for 24/7 for like 3 weeks, and she had a whole team, but they knew this person from all of these cross-functional teams, I was only understanding from an operational standpoint. Now I'm hearing it from a PR standpoint, the communication that needs to be in place is as important as you know who the team is. And if you're a smaller company, your team might be two people. Like, that's okay.
And you have to think about when I'm putting together a crisis communications plan, the first question I ask is, who is affected by this issue? Who needs to know? Who doesn't need to know?
Right.
Because COVID is honestly a great example of none of us had control over this.
Yep.
It impacted everyone in so many different ways, yep, whether it's your team, whether it's your supply chain, whether it's your distribution.
Yep.
And understanding who needs to hear from you and prioritizing that.
Yep.
But also who doesn't. So there are certain things that you do not need to make a statement about. There are certain things that let's say that there is a recall for a product that you know from the lot numbers was only distributed to this region of Kroger and nowhere else.
Yeah.
I'm going to maybe kick myself for saying this, but if it is traceable to that extent and you say, our head of ops knows without a doubt that there was just one shipment from that lot that went to Kroger in this region, do I suggest that you alert the entire country? No.
No.
And also it depends. Obviously there are so many extenuating circumstances, but I think depending on if it's like, maybe it's a packaging issue and you're like the peanut has an almond logo on it and it shouldn't, like, FYI, you need to reach those people so effectively.
Yeah.
But you know who that sampling is, you know who that audience is. You are going to cause so much more harm than good by talking to people in New York,
broadcasting it to the population. Yeah.
Yeah. And similarly, I mean, we saw a lot with Black Lives Matter and Stop Asian Hate. It's who needs to hear from you and why, and what do you have the right to speak on? What should you be speaking on behalf of your company?
Yep.
So the crisis can look very different.
Yep.
It's when do we speak up and who do we speak up to and what is our stance? And so the more you can get ahead of understanding the types of crisis that might affect your company, the better.
Yep.
But even more so, I think it's, what is our step-by-step plan of assessing how we're going to respond that you actually can have laid out as well.
Yeah, that's good. I always,
who's the cook in the kitchen, right?
Yeah, like, who's
not
the head chef?
To say.
Who's the head chef? Who's the sous chef? I think that sometimes there's more power and value in saying less than saying more. And I think,
absolutely.
I think when you don't know what to say, you typically end up saying more.
Or it's a spectrum, right? So you either say nothing.
Oh, right.
And it's like, you know,
yep,
darned if you do, darned if you don't. We saw that a lot over the last year. There were so many things for brands. And I honestly think that has contributed to the success of Maven, because the need was just, there was so much in flux. There was so much happening every single day that it was like, what do we do now? It's a new day. It's a new, new problem.
Yep.
And so I think that is exactly it, is understand your role and your position and your right to say things at certain times.
Yep.
And the more that you can get clear on that, the better off you'll be, because what you don't want is that your crisis becomes another crisis because you didn't respond to it well.
A rolling crisis.
Yeah.
Which happens a lot. Wow. Lots of good stuff here. You know, before we're getting to the end of our time, and before we wrap things up, there's always like, this is the big zag in the podcast where I ask a very certain set of questions that I ask. Everybody gets these exact same questions. So the first one is, I'd love it when my guest tell an interesting fact or a story about their personal life related to this industry. Something that that people can share over like a happy hour or something. Do you have anything to share?
Oh, personal. I mean, I was thinking about just, you know, when you work in this industry, it's like, it's so fun to think about what can go viral and how do we create something that's going to be a PR stunt and everyone's going to be talking about it, right? Like that's the goal here. And time and time again, I'm just proven that you can't force something to go viral. And in fact, it actually happens the other way around, where what you don't think will go viral does.
Yep.
And I have a funny experience that's funny now, that we were launching Perfect Kids back in the day and for Perfect Snacks. And I had an intern and I was like, why don't we essentially troll parents on Instagram with the hashtag mom fail, dad fail. And let's comment on their post and say, we know parenting's hard. Snack time shouldn't be. Go to the link in our bio to get a free box of Perfect Kids brand new at Target. Yeah. And so I was like, just do like, you know, 20 a week and see what we get. Like, it's going to be a slow burn, but like, this could be fun. Yeah. Because what I wanted to do was pitch that to Adweek. And I wanted the headline to say, Perfect Snacks, like trolled failing parents. and like did something, you know, I wanted it to be like a Fuco headline.
Yeah.
That's what I was going for by way of this campaign. Yeah. Well, after a couple of weeks of it, pretty much like doing what I thought it was going to do, in about a 2-hour time span, I think we had 40,000 entries of this form and were what we thought on the hook for 40,000 units of product, because it went viral and it got on all the coupon sites. And I was thinking, you know, because it's not like a coupon, it's a form. People have to fill it out. So this has to be a robot. This cannot be all accurate. Turns out these were people hungry for a free box of bars that were, you know, priced at $5 a pop.
Uh-oh.
And so my director of e-com was like, you got to be kidding me. Like, what did you just do? And we ended up being able to manage the crisis. And we thank God for attorneys that look over terms and conditions, because we said, while supplies last. And so it ended up becoming a win, because we were able to complete, you know, 300 free boxes, but then for everyone else, those other 40,000 people, which anyone would be so excited to have that many emails and zip codes.
Right.
We were able to offer them a discount in store coupon, and we ended up being able to come out pretty well at the other side of it. And I did not pitch it to Adweek, because I was like, this actually didn't happen the way that we wanted it to. I don't necessarily want to publicize it nor talk about it. Let's just brush it under the rug and call it a pseudo win and move on. But you cannot plan for virality. So you have to be ready. Be ready. If you're putting something out there, expect that it might go viral.
Yeah. Good call. So what brands or trends are you following right now? What do you got your eye on and why?
Well, as you know, I'm very much in the natural products industry. Yeah. And I feel like there are new things happening all the time. We did a pitch slam for Naturally San Diego.
Did
we had 30 brands submit and apply. And it was so fascinating to see ingredients that I have never heard of before now becoming the base of products and truly the entire brand. And so I think it's this, if I'm going to go on trends alone, I think it's this emergence of, you know, what's the next cauliflower? What's the next functional ingredient that becomes its own entity versus being an addition to current products? And, you know, just like new species of cherries that now have this incredible benefit. It's like, I'm just so intrigued by all the things that are coming up, that they've been around forever.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever put them to use in a way that is either functional or tasty or in food format this way. So I think that that's really cool. But I think overall, especially coming out of a pandemic, and I think as consumers, we have a different lens than we used to. We're just maybe taking things less for face value and uncovering behind the scenes a bit more to understand the why behind brands. And I, for coming from a PR standpoint, I've always looked at things from a qualitative standpoint.
Yeah.
What's the emotion that we're invoking? What relationship do we have with people? But more so than ever, I think just the storytelling and the why behind your brand is going to be the difference between your consumer buying from you and wanting to go to your website to then going to an Amazon.
Right.
Of course, a rising tide lifts all boats. You're still getting that sale, but how much more valuable to have that consumer within your sales funnel that's getting your communication and building the trust and the loyalty that is going to keep them around much longer than a new shiny object hitting them in the face on another platform.
Yeah.
So I just encourage the qualitative aspects of measurement and not just quantitative, because quantitative is going to tell you a lot, but also look at the quality of what you're doing. Look at the quality of the way that you're showing up in your consumer experience. How are you dealing with customers that had a bad experience with your product? That could create lifelong fans, or it can create a lot of crisis that you don't want to experience online. You know, and I just think there hasn't, especially with digital being so data heavy, it's hard to sometimes remember that the quality matters just as much, if not more, than the quantity.
Agreed. Yeah. Let's see. Are there any women leaders or women rising stars? It doesn't have to be women, but you know, the show is women centric. That you kind of would like to elevate right now? Who's doing some really rad stuff? And they don't have to be CPG specific. They could be a service, packaging, ingredient, anything.
I have been completely astounded at the people I have met, the women I have met over the past year. I feel like I was living in a bubble, because I probably was. But just, I mean, like you, Diana, I feel so lucky to have made the connection, because what I am learning from and just the relationships are so valuable to me, but more than anything, just so inspired by. And there are more women than I can think of to even mention, because I think everyone is so unique in what they're doing, but also how they're doing it and how they're choosing to show up. And it's just so exciting to see. And it's, I attribute a lot to Naturally San Diego, and the other women that are on the board with me are just so incredible. And I feel like have really paved the way for me to be like, no, I got this. Like, it doesn't look exactly like yours does, but like, I can do this. And this is something, if I believe in it and if I feel that I'm relatively good at it, you know, it is, the inspiration is just boundless. And I think that's what I'm so grateful for. I do think if I can just go the CPG route, I have a client brand that I think is just, they just won Fast Company's Most Innovative, or they're a finalist for Fast Company's Most Innovative Companies, but Catherine Jackson and JJ Jackson, her husband, are doing peanut puffs, and they're allergy prevention puffs for infants. And so they're to prevent peanut allergies. And what I didn't know and truly understand before working with them is just how prevalent and vastly progressing food allergies are in kids. And one of their co-founders is Dr. Gideon Lack, who founded and conducted the research around childhood food allergies. And so they found that food allergies, peanut allergies, are actually preventable if we introduce early on, but it's how you introduce, to what extent you introduce. And their Catherine and JJ's daughter has a peanut allergy. And when their next child was born, they were like, how do we avoid this happening to us again? And so they partnered with this pediatrician who has done this research and are producing snacks for kids that taste great. And they're snacks that kids would otherwise normally eat, you know, a puff of some kind, but with traces of peanut protein in them, so that it combats food allergies. And I think my brother and his wife are both type 1 diabetic. I grew up with so many restrictions. And I think I just have such a soft spot in my heart for families who have to endure something that kids shouldn't have to endure.
Yeah.
And it affects everyone and it's really scary. And so, you know, to be putting forth something that is as cute a brand as Mission Mighty Me with all this like superhero, you know, branding and really tasty snacks. But they're doing so much more. It's stuff like that, that I'm like, we need to tell the world about this.
Yes.
It's so exciting and it can do so much good. And that's really inspiring to me as well, that I can have a hand in helping them share this with the world.
That's so exciting. I actually, my son has a friend who had a really bad peanut allergy. And for the last 3 or 4 years, they took a methodology based off of their doctor of doing small incremental to start to combat and overcome. Yeah. So I think that product that you're talking about would be useful for more than just children. It's for like,
absolutely. There's so much opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. Where you start kind of like microdosing it into your,
yep.
Yeah. There's gotta be something there too. They're so new and in startup mode, but they're just, I think there's really big opportunities in that category.
That's exciting. That's super exciting. Well, listen, everybody, we have been talking with Miss Jess Wendell of Maven Consulting. Jess, where can people learn more about you? Are you a LinkedIn person? Or are you a website person?
Yes, I need to get back on LinkedIn full force because I was having so much fun with it before and got quite busy and distracted. Yeah. But definitely on LinkedIn, Jess Wendell or Maven Consulting, and then website where links to all of that is mavenconsultingco.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today and for all the work that you're doing for our communities. It's been really great talking with you. And
thank you so much. It's been so fun.
Yeah, maybe we'll get to see and meet each other in person one day. That'd be fun.
Yes, maybe an Actually Network event.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You can help with the Seattle Network launch. That would be totally great. I'll need a sidekick, I'm sure.
Yes. Definitely support is necessary. But thank you, Diana. It's amazing to talk with you.
Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.